You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of Halloween, October 31st. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Japan Series clinching championship night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Boo. I'm a ghost. Get out of here.
You are officially scaring the children. Fine.
Well, so what's new? And tell me what's new about this?
Usually they're asleep by this time, but you've
woken them up. Well, normally I only scare adults. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am colder than normal. For some reason, it's cold, but probably because we had a dip in the temperatures. But I think it's the sigh and the relief of the season being over, and I'm letting my guard down, and that's why I'm actually feeling the cold a little bit more.
It was chilly this evening. I've been walking around in shorts and t-shirts really until
scaring the children.
No. But today I'm doing the full sweatpants sweatshirt thing.
Okay, thank you. Cover that stuff up. And no black socks.
I have navy socks. Should I go put those on?
No, please. All right, on this week's show, we've got the Japan Series champion, Oryx Buffaloes, to talk about. We're going to look at the games, talk about the Buffaloes, and we've got our West Wing segment from Michael Westbay and a couple of notes, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so congratulations to the Oryx Buffaloes, their first championship in 26 years. And that's a murky statement. That's weird because we've gone through a lot of iterations of the Buffaloes. We had this, in fact, if we go back to when I started and I took this job, my first assignment to cover a game was the Oryx Buffaloes at the Cebu Lions at Cebu Dome, I think it was called. At the time, before all the name changing started, like Prince, and this team was created from the merger between the Oryx Blue Wave and the Osaka Kintetsu Buffaloes, and it goes back to Hankyu. And I don't know if you really want to say it's 26 years, but that's what they were saying on TV. I don't know.
It's
a mess, is what it is.
It's the first Japan Series victory for the franchise in 26 years.
Okay, but yeah, huh?
Well, because they had a bunch as the Hankyu Braves.
And yeah,
Hankyu sold them to Oryx in after the 1988 season. And then they won one Japan Series and lost one as the Oryx Blue Wave. And now they've won one and lost one as the Oryx Buffaloes.
It's a mess. But anyway, 26 years, if you want to say that. Akira Ogi was the manager the last time the team won. And that was the Ichiro Suzuki-led Blue Wave. So anyway, congratulations to them. It was really a great series. 7 games it goes. The Buffaloes wrap it up in game 7, barely holding on for a 5-4 victory tonight. The game ended about an hour plus ago.
Yeah.
And this franchise really has been up and down. I mean, there was a time it was like a laughing stock in some respects. It has had struggles. But I'll tell you this, it started the season this year stumbling and bumbling, and finally the guys seemed to get their footing, and pretty much after the All-Star game is probably, if not the best team in NPB throughout that stretch until the end, it was one of them. And Satoshi Nakajima, the manager, you look at the way he has run this team the past 2 years since taking over, and he really makes you want him to be the manager of the team you support. You know, that's what I was thinking before. He's never really that high, never really that low. He's not emotional. I don't know if I like that. I would like to see a little bit more emotion. He's kind of robotic in that respect. But you can't say anything negative about the way he has gotten this team. He's just righted the ship. And I joked on Twitter about one of my favorite teams, the LA Lakers, and someone said something about riding the ship, and I'm like, what ship? They're out there swimming. But the Buffaloes, they have righted the ship, and they look good. The second, obviously, we had a rematch here in the Japan series, so it's 2 years running. They've been in the Japan series. Looked like they were going to blow it. They blew that game for a draw. Was that game two?
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to come back and run off four straight, including the game that they should have. I mean, technically, they won five in a row. Well, not almost. They had a chance to win five games in this series because they blew that game when they had the 3-run lead and gave that game up. But what were your impressions overall from the entire series?
I guess a couple of things. One, it did go pretty much the way I expected it to go.
Except that you picked the
Swallows. But you said
it was going to be close, and it was.
It was. I thought that these teams are both really good. I thought the both bullpens were quite good. The big difference really was, how many unearned runs were there? About eight altogether,
throughout the series.
Yeah, in the last three Swallows losses, there were like 800 runs.
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah, that's kind of a drag. I mean, you know, well, with unearned runs, they're never quite rarely quite blameless because, you know, the guys had to be on base or, you know, and different things happen. But yeah, it was one of them. Well, I would say two of the errors were huge. One of them turned out not to be so big because it turned one game from being a 1-0 loss to a 3-0 loss.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two pretty much torpedoed the Swallows when they were still alive. You know, it says stuck right. A knife in them. So right. That was probably it. We had the same thing last year when Yuma Mune, who, you know, won his first Golden Glove, but still had made two costly errors, and that really helped sink the Buffaloes a year ago. But I did, so that was one impression. You know, the Swallows struck out a ton, which it was not really any big surprise. We kind of, you know, they strike out a lot, and the Buffaloes strike out a lot of people. So the Swallows hit a bunch of home runs, again, not a surprise. Those were my big impressions. I loved some of the pitching, you know, the pitching by Hiro Miyagi on 4 days rest when he was really, I mean, he was not only good, he was good and in a groove with an umpire who was calling low strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was happy just to throw everything between in a space about an inch into the strike zone to about 3 inches below the strike zone. And
right.
he was just painting the bottom of the strike zone. And he was getting some generous. I mean, not all the time. Most of the strikes were pretty good. I thought the umpires by and large did a really good job. Guys miss a few, guys have small strike zones. So I've said bigger strike zone. I thought the umpire was pretty consistent, but, the way Miyagi was zeroed in, being able to hit that bottom of the zone consistently was crucial for him. That and just that he had his absolutely his best changeup. I thought the changeup really was a deciding pitch because it's the Sachi Yamasaki. That's his best pitch, and it's Miyagi's probably his best pitch. And the Swallows really were not ready for that quality of changeup. They just don't, not that many pitchers throw that good changeups consistently in the Central League that straight off. I mean, there are a few who throw really good ones, but the quality, the ones they saw in the series were really good.
Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, and you think about the Buffaloes losing Yoshinobu Yamamoto in the series opener, which they lost that game, and then Yamamoto not being able to return, they kind of beat them with, they beat the Swallows with one arm literally tied behind their backs. Mm. And I don't know, ripping off four consecutive wins is pretty impressive against the Swallows, especially if you just think about the fact that they didn't do it all at home. They did have to win these games at Jingu. So that was impressive. And coming back from having blown that game, so they had a 3-run lead and gave up a 3-run home run in the ninth inning and then had to play to a 12-12 tie. I'm sorry, a 3-3 tie in 12 innings. And so that game becomes a wash. And, you know, it's not bragging on my part, but I did pick the Swallows to win this matchup last year, and I did get it right this year that the Buffaloes are going to win. But it's just dumb luck, especially when you're talking about a seven-game series. It can go anywhere.
It is, because seven games, yeah, it tells you, you know, it's not going to tell you who's the best team. It's a different challenge from the season, but it's really what it really tells you is who won four games first. You know, okay. that's the answer. I mean, I know people in America were saying, well, how come, you know, what happened to the Dodgers and what happens to the Mets? Well, they didn't win the X number of games first. That's what happened to them.
Well, not first. They didn't win them. But anyway, well, they didn't win them at all. Yeah.
But if you give them enough time, you know, then it's a different story. But it's not like they're a bad team. They suddenly became bad. Like they're somehow lacking. You know, it doesn't tell you that much. I mean, it can tell you a few things, but mostly, oh, geez, we made errors and they didn't. You know?
Yeah, that too. Yeah. All right. Before we get into the games, Yutaro Sugimoto Rao is his official nickname. I like to call him the Masher, and he was the MVP. And I don't know. I actually disagreed with that. And just because I thought the pitchers for the Buffaloes were the MVPs of this series. And I thought Yuki Uragawa maybe could have gotten it. He was fantastic for them. Jacob Wagaspak had 3 saves, although he had a game, I think, in which he at least gave up 1 run, but you can't expect
He had 3 saves and a win. And in game 2, he was trying his darndest to blow that game before the Swallows could tie it, but failed.
You know,
it's one of those ones where you drop something and you expect it to hit the floor, but instead it hits, you know, your dog catches and runs away with it. That was his luck. You know, he was saved by the
break,
dog.
Yeah.
The dog ate his homework. So,
but yeah, I thought the pitchers were the stars. And this thing goes back to the media people in Japan thinking, oh, we have to pick some pitcher who obviously the ace Yamamoto was gone. We can't pick him because he didn't win 2 games. He didn't win 1. So we've got to find someone. And I thought, no, there are guys in the bullpen who did great work. And that's where they stemmed the tide and helped this team get these 4 wins consecutively. It wasn't anything to do with anybody else.
Yeah, because that one, you know, they could easily have won 2 games, 1-0, except they scored twice on an error in game 6. And that was down to the bullpen. And, you know, one guy who really didn't get a lot of love, but this guy was crucial, was 39-year-old Motoki Higa.
Higa, yeah, yes.
He came in, and it's like the Buffaloes were just sort of teetering when Yamamoto got hurt. In the middle of a plate appearance, and Higa got strikeout. And then Higa completed a 1-2-3 inning. And then that was in game 1. And then he comes in and I think he made 4. He pitched in 4 games. And he never pitched more than an inning. But he was just lights out.
Yeah.
And he was sort of, he was like the EMT, the emergency medical technician for the bullpen, coming in and Getting
triage right away, and then
that's right. Getting set up for the big doctors, to do the bullpen surgery and keep the Swallows in critical condition.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not a great metaphor. The doctors,
keep them in critical condition. Let them die at the hospital. You're not going to die on my watch. Die on his. Yeah. Let's get into the games real quick. And just again, we're not going to go through too much detail. We'll just give our impressions for each game. But game 3 was on the 25th of October. The series shifted to Kyocera Dome, Osaka, and the Swallows won that one 7-1. There really wasn't much to talk about except that, you know, Tetsuto Yamada hits a 3-run home run in the fifth. And I think a lot of folks were fixated on that for that particular game. But the biggest impression for me was Keiji Takahashi, the starting pitcher for the Swallows, is like the next Daisuke Yamai. I added up his numbers, right? He's 15 innings pitched in Japan Series play, 0 runs allowed, 8 hits, 4 walks, and 12 strikeouts. And they couldn't touch him last year. He threw his first career shutout. It came in the Japan Series last year, and then they were not able to hit him this year over 6 innings in this game. And that was my big impression, that even though the Buffaloes were able to get some guys on base here and there, they weren't really that close to a run, maybe 1 inning, and then that's it. So, yeah, he's the next Daisuke. You know, Mike, what was your impression of this game?
Well, that was one, especially because Takahashi was not that good since coming back from COVID-19 in September. Mm. So I thought that was a roll of the dice. Miyagi was not that good. It was not that good in the game. But he got a quick hook, and that turned out to be kind of a blessing in disguise for the Buffaloes, because he was available for games, you know, to start in game 7 on 4 days rest. So that was that. The Swallows turned, you know, blew this one out. But I think you're right, because people were focusing on Tetsuto Yamada's 3-run home run, and because he hadn't done anything in games 1 and 2, and they figured, wow, with Yamada firing and all the other guys firing, this series ain't going back to Jingu.
Right.
And then it stopped. And Yamada never got another hit in the rest of the series.
I don't remember. Yeah, I didn't think about it. And I saw, you know, our buddy MPB Reddit complaining that Domingo Santana, why is he still in the lineup? And I'm like, well, at least he's getting good swings. You know, I haven't really seen Yamada he swung really well on that particular pitch, and he has swung at some. He swung well, but he hasn't come close to making the contact that we're used to seeing. So I don't want to really count those good swings, because they're not.
Yep. Yamada had an infield single in his second plate appearance, and he had a home run in his third in game 2. And then, you know, he had a couple of good at bats. I mean, he had a few good at bats when he drew walks, but that was it.
Yeah. So that put the Swallows up 2-0, essentially, because we had the draw. So there officially was 2-0-1 in the series. And then came game 4, and that was a 1-0 win for the Buffaloes. And that was the big turnaround game in this series, obviously. Finally, the Oryx getting a victory, and, you know, they weren't going to get swept. That was one thing. And they were able to save the game, not blowing a lead when they only had a 1-run lead, and they already had blown a 3-run lead in the 9th inning of game 2. So what was your impression from this game?
Oh, marvelous effort from Masanori Ishikawa.
Mm. Of the Swallows, yeah.
Of the Swallows. And then, you know, the guy, Yuki Utagawa, came in, and he got the win after Sugimoto broke up the scoreless game with a run. I had a colleague tonight say, how can you break up a scoreless game with a run? Because once you drive in the run, the game is no longer scoreless. And I'm going, okay, just a baseball thing. Leave me alone.
Yeah, because it makes sense to us.
What was scoreless? Yeah,
right. Exactly. Previously,
so anyway,
yes.
So this game was notable in that the Swallows only struck out 7 times, but Yuki Utagawa struck out 4 of those. He got five outs, and 4 of them came on strikeouts.
Yes, yeah.
And he was just that was an absolute dynamic outing from him, because, you know, he comes in with a runner on one out and a runner on third base. You know, he walked to 2 guys, sort of like daring the Swallows in the 6th thing. I want to put 2 guys on base and see, you know, and then bring the infield in. Okay, all you outfielders, come in and have a seat on the infield, because we're not going to need you. So he gave up. It was pretty much that kind of performance. He faced seven batters. He struck out the first two. And then he walked one, gave up an infield ground out. Well, most 99.9% of ground outs are infield ground outs. Walked another. Right? Walked another. And then struck out the last two guys and did so in dominating fashion. Just that really crisp hopping fastball and this big diving splitter. And the Swallows look like, Mr. Umpire, is this legal? You know, kind of look.
Right. And, you know, again, Nakajima, I liked what he did in these games. I think after that first blown save that he wasn't going to take any chances with guys he wasn't sure about and guys he hadn't seen for a while. I say that, and Udagawa was a guy who mid-season, you know, was a developmental player, and then they gave him a contract, and then he found himself late in the season on the first team, and here he is contributing in the Japan Series. So I don't know how much Nakajima really saw of this guy, but he's at least in his second year with the club. So anyway, my impression was that this bullpen really could get the job done and that they bring guys in who basically could be closers. Taisuke Yamaoka was the starter, and he did have to come out, and Jacob Wagaspak in this game earned his first Japan Series save, but it was the guys in between that it was the, and you talked about Sugimoto driving it home the run, but it was Soichiro Yamazaki, who is basically the next shutdown closer in NPB. If he can really get a reliable secondary pitch that he can command, that I think he's the guy. But then, you know, we talked about Udagawa, and I think Jacob Wagaspak really earned his next year's contract, and he was really valuable. They just looked really good to me, and that was the thing that they turned. Not only did they turn it around, and not only did they win the game, they played really good defense. And we've been talking about this team for years, making jokes along with Costa Freak about how this team, the players jumble, they run themselves out of opportunities to score, they drop balls and take themselves out of opportunity to get out of innings, and then somebody gets a hit, and then somebody drops a ball somewhere in the outfield, and guys are running all around the bases, and they didn't do any of that. We didn't see, I wouldn't say hardly any, but that was such a minimal aspect to this series. It just didn't make a lot of mistakes. And I thought this was the turnaround game in that aspect, that not only did the bullpen come in, but that the defense behind those guys really stepped up. And that's why they got the win just as much as what the pitchers were doing. You said, talk about the outfielders coming to have a seat. Why did they have to walk all the way to the infield if they're not needed? Just let them sit in the outfield.
Could do, I suppose.
All right. So that gave them the first win. So it's two games for the Swallows, one game for the Buffaloes, and a draw. And then we go to game five, and that ends up being the most dramatic of the games, probably, now that we're done. 6-4 comeback victory for the Buffaloes. Masataka Yoshida, the second leading hitter in the PL in the regular season, wins it with his second home run of the game, a dramatic walk-off shot. And it was weird to say that the series was tied after five games. And I remember writing that in the stories that I translated. Somebody came over and said, what do you mean the series is tied 2-2 after five games? And I'm like, well, I wrote 2-2 and 1 there, so you can't disregard the 1. And there was a tie, and there are ties in Japanese series baseball games. And unfortunately, we had to experience that. So now it has thrown everything off, including the fact that we could have a game 8, 9, 10, 11 until this thing is decided. So get out of my face.
Yeah, I started expressing it. I realized that, you know, with the tie, we haven't had a tie for, I think, since 2017, 2018, I think, was the last time we had a tie. And I realized the best way to say it is to say, A, it's not a seven-game series. It's the first team to win 4.
Yes, you say that, and I say that, and we all know that. However, the Yomiuri writes best-of-7 format, And so that's what we're required to write.
Unfortunately,
Well, it is a best of seven format.
It's the best of seven wins.
Well, I mean, format. Format meaning the first team to four wins. But if you just say best of seven series, then that could be construed as not correct. But best of seven format meaning the first to four
wins. So it's tied at two wins apiece, and let's just ignore that there was a tie. I mean, that's what they do. So
it's just a big waste of time. Yes.
Yep. A lot of that going around.
Yeah. So, what was your impression from this game?
This was a wild game. I mean, this is the one where both teams just crammed the bases full of batters. I mean, and nobody could get the monster hit. And then the Swallows took a lead. This was Hideki Nagaoka's big game because he got a Swallows shortstop.
Yes,
that's right. He tied it up in the sixth inning, and he hadn't done much in the didn't do too much in the series offensively, but it was basically the Swallows bullpen was just lights out when they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then they weren't. And two innings, you know, and it's like they got two perfect innings from Noboru Shimizu, and Swallows fans were feeling pretty good about life in general. And then a leadoff walk by Scott McGuff, and then in the ninth inning, and the crazy stuff started happening. It wasn't a pretty walk either. It wasn't like Yoichi Adachi was out there actually trying to battle or anything. He didn't really have to battle too much. He got a bunch of pitches out of the zone, and they were kind of easy takes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shuhei Fukuda gets down a bunt. That's fine. So tying run on second, one out, and then Masahiro Nishino comes. That was so funny because the Buffaloes were going, Masahiro Nishino.
Didn't McGuff throw the ball away?
Yeah, that was it. You know, he hit a sharp grounder back to the pitcher that came off of McGuff's glove, and he had to chase it down, and then he threw the ball. It was at Osaka Dome, and I think he was trying to throw it to Kobe. He thought maybe the game was being played there or something. I don't know.
Hashtag high heat.
Anyway, so that scored the tying run, and then things unraveled after that, and it wasn't like Masataka Yoshida hit his second home run, and Oryx's second home run of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And wins it in a walk-off. And so, yeah, pretty good. And Masataka Yoshida was basically intentionally, he spent so many times going to the batter's box without seeing a pitch that it's almost like he forgot how to hit. You were wondering, actually kind of wondering that at the end of the series, because he pretty much stopped after he hit the home run. It was like he figured his job was over.
Mm. Well, you guys got to do something now. It can't always be me.
Exactly. I mean, this is the guy who basically did a remarkable job this year, carrying the Buffaloes whenever he was fit to play. He also had some fitness issues and COVID mm-hmm. issues, and he came back, and he was the guy who just put a torch to the Pacific League in the second half. And, What a wonderful player! So that was the game five when the error opened the door. I mean, the error. Without the error, they're still probably gonna tie the game, but they might not win it, and it, you know, might go on. We'll see. But the error really was a crucial turning point there.
Right, and I had three impressions that I took away from this game. Sugimoto gunning down Yamada at the plate after a two-out hit to end the first inning after the Swallows had already scored a run. And then the aforementioned Higa getting Jose Osuna to hit into a double play with runners on first and third and one out in the fifth. And then basically the Buffaloes winning with their B bullpen group giving up the lead along the way, but still being able to come back and win the game because they were not going to use Yamazaki and they were not going to use Udagawa. Those guys had thrown already, and the broadcast was saying those guys are not available tonight. And they actually, after this game, they won. And had they not blown the 3-run lead in game two, they would have been up 3-1 at the series. And you know, this could have been a clinch situation. So that was my takeaway, was that, well, this bullpen is really coming to its own. And I think Nakajima has a weapon that maybe we talked about at the end of the season as we were going through, and we were saying this bullpen, they're using so many guys and you never know who's going to come at you. And I don't mind that they don't have a traditional closer type, that they're using different guys. Although I didn't like Shota Abe at the back of the bullpen, and they resolved that. He was willing. That's the other thing about this manager. Why I was just really like his demeanor is that, you know, look, he didn't get mad. He didn't get excited. Even when they won, he was sitting there when they got the, I think here in game seven here, Wagaspak went 0-2 to the last batter. And, you know, Nakajima's just sitting in the dugout taking notes. Like, oh, you were on the verge here. I thought he was going to get up, or people were going to get up and hang on the rails. And I think they were just all too nervous to do that thing where guys get ready to run onto the field. But he's just very calm. So he was not riled at all. And he was very much willing to make changes and make adjustments. And because he didn't have to worry about the traditional closer, because Yoshihisa Hirano was not the big guy at the back of the bullpen, he could use him in any situation. And that probably inspired Hirano a little bit to say, well, you know, you're not going to let me close games. I'll show you. I'll get these guys out, and then you'll wish you had me at the back of the bullpen when they blow this thing, you know. And then they didn't. So I just thought I loved his flexibility in that aspect, and his willingness to change the plan or adjust the plan or make the plan work for that game, for that night. Conversely, I didn't like some of the things Shingo Takatsu was doing for the Swallows. One of them, leaving in this rookie pitcher, which I thought, you know, I thought, well, maybe they're just going to sacrifice him or something. But Hikaru Yamashita threw really well, and he dodged and bobbed and weaved later on, but he got through five innings in this game, and he allowed 3 runs. And, you know, in a playoff situation, in a series, a winning, you know, a championship series situation, 3 runs, that's a lot for 5 innings. And he should have or could have given up a lot more. So I thought, that seemed weird to me. And
well, I think all the games were really, you know, at this point, I think what you said about Nakajima is absolutely on point. First of all, and it points out the kind of team the Buffaloes have been for a while. Nakajima didn't quite inherit this Swiss Army knife of a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did kind of inherit a Swiss Army knife of a team where, you know, Keita Nakagawa is a second baseman, third baseman, at left fielder, center fielder.
He's Bugs Bunny.
Shuhei Fukuda, exactly. Shuhei Fukuda is a second baseman, and then he's a shortstop and a third base, and then he's the center fielder. And Yota, who was a first-round draft choice and kind of a Buffalo's family guy because his father's a bullpen pitcher for him, batting practice pitcher for him. He was a second baseman. He's never really stuck. He's not that fast. He was a high school shortstop. He doesn't have the arm. And his offense is just basically not really – he hasn't really adjusted to playing professional baseball as a hitter. But, you know, he dropped Yuma Tongu, who was one of the guys who, next to Yoshida, carried the offense in the second half, and he dropped him like a bad habit.
Nakajima did, yeah.
Yeah, and he put Ryo Ota in at first base, and they asked him at the end of the series, you know, what were your thoughts about Ota? He says, I wanted a guy who was just going to go up there and who I knew was going to swing the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a thing, like, I want to, you know, it's almost, I know he's trying to be positive and saying, you know.
maybe but, not.
Yeah, but basically, you know, just try to hit the ball. And that was really a problem for both of these teams, you know, and Shingo Takatsu said after game four, you know, we had chances to drive in the run, and you know, you need a big hit at some point. You can't win unless you actually get a hit. And so we got to do something about that. And Nakajima essentially said the same thing after the same game. You know, this is not a good looking game for us.
Right.
Offensively. And he said the same thing after game five. You know, this is a game we could have won much more easily. But the last thing I'll go back to is Yutaro Sugimoto. And you talked about him throwing out Yamada at the plate in the first inning. And now that comes up because we've got a 3-3 tie in the sixth inning. And Yasutaka Shiomi, who can fly, is on first base with two outs. And Norichika Aoki doubles down the right field line. And you could see either the coach or Shiomi said, well, I'm not going to be the next guy to get thrown out at home plate.
Yeah. Exactly. Slammed on the brakes, yeah.
So he really, in that sense, you know, maybe he wouldn't have saved a run, but it did have an impact in that case.
Sure did. All right, so then game six, we shift back here in Tokyo to Jingu, and I felt like the Yakult Swallows looked like a team that didn't expect to see Sachiya Yamasaki a second time in this series, at least not in this game, and they probably really thought that Yamamoto was going to throw and they weren't going to believe the reports. And you looked it up for me because I was kind of thinking that maybe they just didn't hit left-handers very well this season, but you said they were the best team against lefties this season, and they really struggled. They struggled against Yamasaki, and we had talked about him on the show, and I badmouthed them saying, hey, look, he's a high traffic pitcher. You know, you get walks from him, you get hits, you get guys on the bases. And that was in the regular season because he really turned it up, as did Miyagi tonight too. And you talked about that, but Yamasaki really looked better than I think you couldn't expect anything more from him. The way he was pitching, didn't give up a run in five innings, ends up getting the win. And all of a sudden the Buffaloes go from looking like they were going to get run out of this series after three games and not having won one to being on top and being on the verge of winning a Japan series after a 3-0 win at Jingu on Saturday. So what was your impression from this game?
Yeah, well, talking about Sachi Yamasaki, he's Taisuke Yamaoka has got better, I think, overall better stuff and more consistent. I mean, he's more of a veteran pitcher, but Daiki Tajima and Sachi Yamasaki, they're these guys who, and I put Soichiro Yamazaki in with them last year because guys have really good stuff, but they're grab bags.
Hmm.
In that their stuff just comes and goes from week to week. And that when they're on, they're just absolutely lights out. But it's kind of a roll of the dice with these guys. Well, and about a high traffic pitcher, what you really need is guys who catch the ball, and they got some great catches when he was in the field. So they got some great plays behind him, and that allowed him to, you know, to walk a bunch of guys. And, you know, he only allowed one hit, but he did walk a bunch of guys, and it didn't cost him. So, and there was some great plays. I'll say I expected, well, this is one of the things I did expect that absolutely did not play out, which was basically all season the Swallows were a better defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
better, meaning better than the Buffaloes on paper? Yes.
Well, yeah. Not, I mean, just in what they did. And you can only really compare teams to the teams they play against in their own games.
Sure.
But when you look at, you know, how often the Swallows turn double plays compared to the number of runners they have on first base and compared to the teams that face them and the Buffaloes. And the Buffaloes were one of the worst teams turning double plays in NPB, and the Swallows were one of the best.
Okay.
And Swallows were decent defensive club. I mean, the Buffaloes were good at catching the ball, but double plays were kind of a problem. Errors were kind of a little bit of a problem. So I didn't anticipate that the Swallows would be the weaker end of that, but the Buffaloes got, the pitchers served up some pretty easy double plays, and they turned them, no problem there. They got a couple of really good ones. They outplayed the Swallows on defense overall, that was something I did not expect, but, you know, that happens.
Yeah, and one of the plays I would like to highlight was the catch that Keita Nakagawa made up against the wall in the third inning. A ball hit to center field, and it was a ball hit by Domingo Santana to center. And like I said, Nakagawa isn't a center fielder, and really I don't know how much outfield at this level he has been playing, and certainly center field where you have a lot of responsibilities. You have to go over and cover for your left fielder and your right fielder in case a ball comes off the wall or gets past him or whatever your responsibilities are. And one of the things that's very difficult about the play that he made look easy, is that sometimes when you're jumping and you're near the wall can stop your flight in the air if you hit it on the way up. And he was really careful not to hit the wall, made his leap, made the catch. And it was a really good play by a guy who probably doesn't have a lot of experience making that play. So I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, he did kind of save that game, because it was scoreless, and without the catch to rob Santana to open the inning, and then making the two out grab in the gap, which, you know, they were going nuts about on TV off of Shiomi. But it was let's say it's a routine catch for a guy who plays center field every day. But that was the thing, you know, all these Oryx guys. And like I said, he dropped to Tongu, and then Ota came in as a pinch hitter and he did okay. And then he came in, you know, he had him playing at second base, which is his regular position. And then, I guess he said, well, Tongu, you know, like, what if you haven't done much for me recently? Go to the back of the line somewhere. You know, go sit at the kids' table, because he had this guy who's never really hit in the Japanese major league level, who's only basically played second base, is underpowered at first base, and he said, you know, he dropped him in game 6 and 7, he put him in the leadoff spot and batted him, you know, and played him at first base, and I'm going, like, you know, what's up with this?
Right, and then Ota's home run on the first pitch of the game tonight was the first time in Japan Series history that the first pitch of the game has been hit for a home run. So he really banged the bonus on that mid Nakajima.
he did, and that was, like, as he said after the game, like, who'd have thunk it?
Well, a lot of people wouldn't have, especially with this team in general, because of the way that Buffalo started the season. But let's get to Game 7 now. That was tonight. 5-4 was the final. Buffalo's win and sealed the Japan Series. And I just remember the way Koji Akiyama managed the Japan Series, and he made it seem like it was killer baseball. You know, it's killer be killed, and he would make moves and bring in guys, and he played each game. It could be game 2 or 3, but he was going full cannon. Forget the guns. we want shoulder rockets and cannons. He didn't come out with any guns. I didn't think Takatsu did that in this game. There were a few times, including the Yamashita game, in which he left a guy out there, I thought, a little bit long. And I thought, in this game, Cy Snead started off again. We just talked about the fact that his first pitch for the Swallows was hit to center field for a home run, and he had a little bit of traffic in the first inning. The bases end up getting loaded, but he gets out of that trouble, and then he sharpens up. But then later in the game, this is a game 7, and there's no tomorrow, although there was going to be a tomorrow, a game 8, but essentially there's no tomorrow. And I thought Takatsu was a little bit slow on the trigger, in that I didn't think the runners on base in the fifth inning where all Seiss needs fault or anything. It wasn't like he was getting hit around the park, but you have a situation there. And even though the pitch that was hit that was not caught, she only had a chance to catch it.
That was a bad pitch.
Yeah, that pitch was hittable, and that was the problem. And it wasn't that Shiomi dropped it for a three base error or whatever it turned out to be, a three run error.
That was the other problem.
That was the other problem when you don't make the play. But the problem was the traffic, and I just would have made it. I'm just talking about me. I'm not saying it was a mistake. I like being aggressive, and I thought it was a time to be aggressive, and he wasn't. That's all.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. I think had Nakajima been managing, of course, you know, the Swallows are a different team. Mm-hmm. They basically have, you know, they've got Shiomi and they've got Yamada and they've got Murakami and Osuna and Santana mostly. If they're healthy, they're all playing.
Right.
The Buffaloes are a much kind of wiggly, let's move around. They're more like Jell-O.
They're scrappy. As Jay Jackson would love to say, yeah.
They're what? They're
scrappy.
They're scrappy. They're Gumbies. You know, they're flexible.
Okay.
So, you know, you're going to see Masataka Yoshida wasn't the cleanup hitter at the start of the series, and then he ended as a cleanup hitter, and Tongu was there, and then Tongu wasn't, and then Nakagawa is at first base, and then he's in left field, and then he's in center field. You know, that's just the way the Buffaloes are, and the Swallows really aren't that team, and Takatsu's, that's not really his style.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if Nakajima had been managing the Swallows, Munetaka Murakami would not have been batting cleanup the whole series.
Yeah, I don't think that's
a bad thing to do, because he's Murakami. And it's hard to say you're wrong when he's by far the best hitter on the team, and you know he could, but you know that's just the way it worked out. There was never panic mode for the Swallows, and I get that. With Snice Need, I think there were situations, but I was looking at the pitches he was making. I'm going, damn, you know they were not getting good swings off him. You know, well, the Ota got a good swing because, you know, he basically said, I'm going to swing at a first pitch fastball, even if it's 2 inches below the zone. And, you know, and he clocked it, and, you know, more power to him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the best fastball in the world, but you usually don't expect those ones below the knees to get hit out to center field as he did. So,
yeah.
You know, that's, you know, more power to Ota for that, and the bunt he laid down. More power to him for that one. That was an absolute beauty. You just don't see him any better than that.
Yeah, the bunch that snuck through and around gloves and everything. Yeah, it was.
Well, just, no, that was the Miyagi one that snuck through the gloves because he bunted it past Murakami, and there's not a lot you can do about that. But Ota's was a beauty because Murakami was they weren't rotating. In fact, I don't think they ever rotate on a bunt in Japan like they do in MLB. I don't remember ever seeing it, but he was playing it, you know, he was anchored to third base waiting for the throw on the sacrifice. And so
you see the angle, he ran back to third. And sure. Then when he realized the ball was going to get past the pitcher, he made it step toward the mound.
Yeah, well, he was back to cover. There was no rotation play where the shortstop covers third on that one. So,
well,
so Ota just exploited that, and good for him. So, but I thought most of the pitches he made, there were really, you know, he hit two batters, and those aren't good pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave up a walk that was completely unnecessary because he was, Cy Sneed's strength is throwing the ball in the strike zone. And he had a pretty good fastball tonight. People were not getting good swings at it. And he figured if I throw one outside the zone to, he threw a couple outside the zone that were really effective, except, you know, guy hits one, shanks one off the barrel. Okay. And that's a leadoff single that starts that inning. And then there's the bunt single that's just weird. And there's the bunt single that's really good. It was like everything that was going wrong. And I think you're right to the degree of when things are just going wrong, sometimes you got to say, okay, I'm not going to let things go worse for you. So I think that's a way of looking at it. And yeah. And certainly Nakajima was quick on his hook, quick on the hook with guys. You're thinking, wow, that was fast a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never thought so.
I thought it was saying, well, you know, I'm going to go to my bullpen in the fifth inning. I'm good. But that's, you know, that's fine. That's another way of looking at it. I don't think it was wrong. I don't think it was quick, but it was quicker.
Right. And I don't
Takatsu,
think.
I think you're right, was playing it more like, this is how I've played all year and this is how I'm going to play.
Yeah. I kind of got the sense that, just like you're saying, that the Swallows had this powerful lineup. They had guys at different positions who could hit home runs from a lot of spots in the lineup, whereas I think you understood that there were two guys who were going to get home runs for the Buffaloes, and they were walking Yoshida most of the time, and Sugimoto, they were getting out a lot of the times, and then he got better as the series went on. But I thought the pitching staff, the rotation at least, was different in that I didn't think, other than Yamamoto, anybody was going to throw a complete game or even pitch into the seventh inning. So if at the first sign of trouble, I thought Nakajima was going to go to the bullpen, and he did. So it was no surprise. I think
I don't think it was a surprise.
What you said just now, that that Takatsu maybe had a season long plan that he wasn't going to, you know, vary from here in the Japan series too far. You know, maybe he would go a little bit.
Yeah, well, that was his thing. Pretty much, these are my guys, and I'm going to go with them. He didn't make too many changes. Right. You know, the one game when Yamada had his two hits, he batted him leadoff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of like, oh, the Swallows are fixed. Everything's good. That was his one big change the whole series. I mean, he moved Norichika Aoki around a little bit. He basically dumped Kotaro Yamasaki after a couple of games. But that was about it. You know, his established guys, they were the guys, and he was going to live and die with them.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the wrong move. I think those guys.
Oh, I don't think it's wrong. Yeah, it's just a different move. Yeah, it could have. Yeah. I mean, it worked out for him fine last year. It didn't work out for him fine this year. But you don't know that the option the other way would have worked out. But it was fun, and I just love that. Like I said to John before the show. You know, I watch the Swallows more than I watch most other teams. Kind of, you know, we got history of a sorts. I'm not overly, you know, I'm not a big fan anymore. It's hard to be when you've got to watch 12 teams. But I do watch them a lot, and so I have more of a sense of what they're trying to do. And I was disappointed that they lost. But I was also so happy that Oryx won, because I just think, you know, what a classy bunch of people they have now with the Shigetoshi Hasegawa as a top advisor for this team, and a manager who's really likable and who isn't, you know, who sort of like shakes off. Well, he's incredibly likable in that, you know, they asked him after the series, they said, please tell us about your managing style, how you got through all these problems. This is what managing style. I just, you know, try to use the guys who are playing best.
Yeah. You know, he's no nonsense, no frills, none of this BS stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
I like him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's none of this. We should do this because this is the way things should be done. Even if I don't understand them or I don't care.
Hmm. Hmm. All right, well, we've got to move along here, but again, congratulations to the Oryx Buffaloes, and especially our fan or our follower on Twitter and listener, Igoru-san. Congratulations. And
I
said this was going to be a trilogy, so I have a long offseason to think about whether I'm going to stick with that or not. But we do have a West Wing segment, so let's get to that. Michael Westbay has sent in some, I guess there was some discussion about Teruaki Sato of the Hanshin Tigers on the subreddit, or I forgot where he's part of another group of MPV, a discussion group or something. I don't even know what it is, to be honest, but he said there was some discourse. Is that way one way to say it? But let's take a listen to Michael Westbay in the West Wing.
Welcome back to the West Wing, analytics support staff to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. I'm Michael Westbay. Shortly after the All-Star break on the English NPB Discord, some Tigers fans were lamenting a loss to the Carp as a turning point to Hanshin's fortunes. At the time, they were riding a great run before and after the All-Star break. The turning point comment seemed to be sarcastic irony to me, and I continued along that vein by adding, turning point? Like the All-Star game was for Teruaki last year? Ooh, one Tigers fan didn't take that comment as the humorous irony I had intended. My wife has commented in the past that my ironic remarks are sometimes too close to a painful truth for some people. But my impression of the Tigers' slugging sophomore at the time was that he was producing well. The Tigers had just won 8 of their last 11 games. The Tigers and Teruaki were performing nothing similar to the post-All-Star collapse that they suffered last year. Well, a few weeks later, I started to feel rather sorry for the plight that the Tigers fans had been witnessing since that seeming turning point that one of them ironically called that loss. So after the season ended, I did a quick analysis of Teruaki's career, breaking it down into 4 segments, before and after the All-Star break for 2021 and 2022 seasons, respectively. My initial analysis of Sato's performance between the 4 segments suffers from a lack of common denominator. That is, he played 10 more games in the first half of 2022 than 2021, and 7 more games in the second half of this season compared to last. While that may not be a difference of a lot of games, it's 60 and 68 at-bats different, respectively. So, saying that his hit output improved by 16 while his home runs dropped by 5 for the first half, and he had 26 more hits while only hitting one more home run in the second half, leaves out a bit of context. So let's turn to percentages for comparisons. Batting average is the most common way of comparing hitting for a variable number of at-bats. Teruaki raised his batting average from 267 to 274 for the first half of this season compared to last. But the biggest change was going from 158 in the second half of last year to 244 this year. Yes, his production dropped from the first half, but it didn't fall off a cliff like it did in 2021. While Sato greatly improved his batting average in 2022, the number of home runs he hit were down. He finished with just 20 home runs in the 2022 season, which is what he had during just the first half last year. Looking at it from a perspective of groups of 10 games, Teruaki hit an amazing 2.3 home runs per 10 games in the first half of 2021. That dropped to 1.6 home runs per 10 games for the first half of 2022. For the second half of both seasons, he averaged just about one home run every 10 games. So what can be said about the All-Star break being a turning point for Teruaki Sato? Well, Teruaki did decline in the second half of both seasons. But whereas that decline was such that he lost playing time in 2021, he wasn't the lead weight on the Tigers' offense this past season as he was the previous year. I'll have a link to the data, my analysis tables, and this transcript available in the show notes. Until next time, take care.
All right. So, obviously, Teruaki Sato is, he is going to be, I believe, for a long time, if not the rest of his career, one of those guys who is looked at very closely and scrutinized because he has so much power. And remember, I told you that his rookie year and the cameras were following him as he was doing a workout in the gym and he had his shirt off. And I said, good grief, that guy has muscles coming out of his muscles. And he's just that guy. He's going to be followed around and expectations are going to be high for him. But I like that Michael was able to break his career so far, his 2 seasons in the quarters. And that makes sense. I like how he went about it. You know, I just have this philosophy about players, whether they're phenoms or whether they're guys who have to work their way to become consummate pros, as we, you know, that another nebulous statement that we never really know exactly what that means. But I take it to mean a guy who we can have expectations about what the production is going to be, have expectations about how the player is going to play in certain situations. But my philosophy just being that it takes 3 to 4 years for these guys to fully get their bodies in tune with their minds. First, when you, whether you are able to contribute that first season as a rookie or you're not, and you have to work your way into the lineup and then work to stay into the line, in the lineup. And then you go through your first off season, you know, that first season, getting used to the rigors of being a professional and playing so many more games than you ever played before. Everyone says, well, yeah, you know, now your job is to play baseball and you get to play baseball. But the other part is, yes, but you have to play baseball and you have to do the other things that get you ready to play baseball. And that can be physically draining or physically taxing. And so it takes a while for the body to catch up. And then you've got the mental aspect in which you have teams and opponents studying what made you successful that first year, if you were able to have that success the first year, or why you didn't have success the first year. And now you become a marked man, or you have put film out there and now people are studying and they know what your tendencies are, what your skills set bring, what your skill set is, and what your strengths and weaknesses are, and they can pinpoint and exploit. And it's about that third year where you, you know, third to fourth year, depending on the player, where you're better at realizing how to make quicker adjustments and what opponents are doing and how to analyze them and what their weaknesses are and put all those things together, the mental side with the physical side. And so I think, you know, Sato is going to be a perennial all-star. I you know, wouldn't mind having that production on my team, my favorite team, but you just can't have, in my opinion, too many expectations for these young players, these inexperienced players, because he's not all that young. But it just takes time, and the patience and understanding, and, you know, growing pains are real. It does take time. It's not sudden. You got to look at a 10-year plan, especially for a guy like this. You want this guy to be around and be productive, and put some talent around him and help him out. But he needs time to develop and get used to all these things. What was your take on the West Wing?
Oh, I thought it was pretty simple. You know, he was more consistent in his second season, which is, you know, we do have to separate. You know, just the numbers are performance results,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to indicators of, you know, what's actually happening. They're just what happened. You know, again, you know, balls well hit that are caught or is, you know, looks the same as the ball that you had no chance of getting a hit on because you swung under it and missed and popped it up to second baseman. They look exactly the same.
Right, in the scoreboard.
In the numbers. So there's always a little bit of noise in there, and you can't always tell what's going on from the numbers. But yeah, so his numbers were more consistent. He looked more consistent. He looked like a more of a viable player in the second half. I get what you said about, you know, you learn to make adjustments. Everybody, it's a constant set of adjustments. What are people trying to do to me? What am I not doing right that I should be doing? What do I need to learn to do this thing better? I think you're right on it. And I'm glad you clammed up about the muscles, because that would be too selfish of you to keep going on in that direction.
I should say selfish. Yikes. We were going to get through a whole store podcast without you making one of these bad ones. And you did. Oh, well. Oh, well. So, yeah, Sato had 24 home runs as a rookie. He had 20 this season, but he had more RBIs. He had more doubles. He had more at-bats because, like Michael said, he wasn't glued to the bench as much in this season. So good on him. I expect more from him next year.
Oh yeah.
And,
but you know, I think what you said about patience is true too. And as we know, patience is the Hanshin Tigers watchword.
Well, the fans. We're talking about the fans here, not the Tigers or not the media down there. But
oh,
fans.
Okay. Well, if we're okay. Well, yeah. Well, forget that.
Yeah. Patience, yeah, they'll have patience too. Where do we think the media people get it? Yeah.
I think the Tigers' patients all end up in the morgue.
I knew you were going there. I know your jokes before you think of them. That's scary. I'm in your head, Jim Allen. No comment.
Good thing I'm having a CAT scan tomorrow.
All right. A couple of notes. One, a popular Nippon Ham Fighters player, Kenshin Sugiya, decided that he was going to announce his retirement suddenly this past week, which he did. And I don't know. He's not a great player, not a famous player, not a regular player, but very popular player, and certainly a rah-rah guy on that bench. So that team will probably miss him. And one other note: the Hanshin Tigers this past week announced that only one of their seven imports was going to stick around. Guys including Jeffrey Marte and Joe Gunkel and the whole lot are gone. Only one who's going to stick around, it appears, is Kyle Keller. So new blood coming in for the Hanshin Tigers, as well as the Hanshin Tigers making a trade with the Fighters and picking up infielder Ryo Watanabe. And so hopefully that middle of the infield rebuild is in progress here as we talk in the offseason. And my prediction was they were going to do something at least at second base. And Watanabe, although I don't remember how well he plays at second base, is probably an upgrade. That's my guess. But I don't know. I joke.
I think tool-wise, I don't think so. But I think it's a message trade.
Sure.
Which is, you could be
shape
next.
Up or you could be next. No, we're just bringing in some competition, and if you're going to screw up, you're going to have to do it on the bench where it doesn't hurt us.
And they send interesting is and I put it on Twitter. Somebody said, "Oh, I never quite realized that," but 99% of the trades in Japan are calculated on the equation of what are the chances. They try to calculate what are the chances this guy could actually be useful to the team we're trading him to, mm-hmm. and embarrass us.
Right.
So it's never what does this do for us?
Not what you can do for us. Ask what you won't do to us.
pretty much. And even when it's in the other league and they're getting rid of a guy who has shown flashes of really being as typical with many career Hanshin Tigers minor leaguers, has really shown flashes of being a good ball player, Taiga Yagoshi. But I think they finally realized they gave up. I think they just said, well, he hasn't done what we expected him to do, so he must not be a very good baseball player. And this was very much reminds me of the Yomiuri Giants getting rid of Taishi Ota.
Mm-hmm.
He's not up to our standards, so, you know, how good could he be? Well, it turns out the
broken.
Answer was was pretty darn good.
Yeah. Pretty
and
good.
I think
all
right. Yagoshi, but he's sort of past that point. You know, that's the problem with the Tigers and their farm team is a lot of these guys who actually are good players, by the time they get a chance to show it, they're too old.
Well, if we don't end this show, I'm going to be too old. So let's move it on.
You say that like being old is a bad thing.
Okay. You know, it's not. It's not a bad thing. You would know.
I would know.
Yes, I know. All right. Hopefully, Jason Koskrie, we can get him to sit down with us for next week. I did contact him and ask him, and I said the weekend after the Japan series ends, we would like to have you on. So hopefully he's listening right now and warming up his vocal cords and getting ready for some good old fashioned Jason snarkasm. So that'll be next week. And I'm not sure if we'll have a guest or not, but I am still trying to line one up. So we'll see how that goes. And as for the off season program, we do have Samurai Japan Baseball. So we will have shows. I'm not sure if it will go every week. We are going to go next week, and I think the week after that is when we've got Samurai Japan Baseball, so we're probably
9th and 10th, I think,
having shows on those weekends as well. But John needs a break, and so does Jim. Maybe John Moore.
Jim has no kids.
That's right. But anyone who has a question, hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat at JBW Podcast. Send your questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. And you can also go to the Facebook page and leave us some notes there. We will have our best moments of the season and all those kinds of wrap up the season things next week with Jason. We will talk to you then. Enjoy your off season.
See you at the Japanese national team ballparks, because that's what we got coming up.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.